This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Last week, they appointed the governor and its two deputies and the mayor of the city. They also appointed the mayor of Bukavu.
That was Fabien Muwazi, Secretary General of the Center of Political and Strategic Studies, based in Bukavu, on steps M23 rebels are taking in the town of Bukavu. Details coming up also. Humanitarian organizations are developing a disaster preparedness program in the Horn of Africa region to enhance early warning systems. And thousands of people gathered to attend the burial of Namibia's founding president, Sam Nujoma. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Airstrikes in Sudan, particularly in Darfur, have intensified, causing widespread civilian casualties. From Adre, Chad, Henry Wilkins shares the story of Khadija, a refugee who lost her son to one of these aerial attacks in the ongoing civil war between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces.
Khadija, who requested her identity be protected for fear of retribution, said she experienced a similar airstrike just days before she was interviewed for this story.
It was the army's air force. They didn't intend to kill my son, but because the rapid support forces were in the area, he was killed by accident while he was playing with other children. The body was in a bad state, so we had to make sure his siblings didn't see him. We had to take his body away quickly.
Khadija's story is not unusual. Rights groups have criticized the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, for carrying out airstrikes in civilian areas of Darfur. Abdullahi Hassan is a researcher on the Sudan conflict for Amnesty International.
Airstrikes happening in Sudan generally, and particularly in Darfur, primarily attacks carried out by the Sudanese Armed Forces. We have received information that the Sudanese Armed Forces have carried out strikes in, for example, in the Nyala city in South Darfur.
Hassan, who is also a Kenyan lawyer and human rights advocate, pointed out that international law requires warring parties to ensure the safety of civilians, even in areas where enemy forces are present. At the start of the war nearly 2 years ago, the SAF was the only side in the conflict that could carry out airstrikes. However, a February 26 Reuters report revealed that satellite images show that the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, have at least 3 drones at a South Darfur airport. The US has accused the RSF of genocide. Hassan says Amnesty International is investigating recent reports of RSF drone strikes.
In late 2024 and in early 2025 now, we have also received credible allegations whereby the rapid support forces have also started carrying out airstrikes using drones.
The Reuters report says the drones appear to be Chinese-made. Neither the RSF nor SAF responded to requests for comment. For Khadija, the loss of her son is a devastating blow, but her memories of him remain strong.
He loved his siblings very much. He loved me very much. I never separated from him. I was with him 24 hours a day.
As the conflict in Sudan rages on, the civilian cost of indiscriminate airstrikes is becoming more apparent by the day. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adre, Chad.
As countries face increasing risks of climate-related disasters in the Horn of Africa, a trade bloc has partnered with humanitarian organizations to develop a disaster preparedness program to enhance early warning systems and strengthen risk management across the 8 member states. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Climate extremes are becoming a familiar pattern across the world. Experts say the effects have been devastating in the Horn of Africa due to a lack of preparedness. An 8-country trade bloc is coming up with solutions. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, has developed an anticipatory action plan to help the region's member states minimize losses caused by climate disasters. As Ahmed Abdihoun, IGAD's Regional Program Manager for Disaster Risk Management, explains.
We are trying to provide a guidance as IGAD, as a regional body, to help countries and the region transition towards anticipation, which is also in par with the climate crisis narrative, the development narrative, but also, most importantly, on how to address the humanitarian needs and the humanitarian crisis that seems to be perennial in the IGAD region.
The IGAD Anticipatory Action Plan provides member countries and other partners with a roadmap for putting in place necessary measures before disasters strike. The process begins at the IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center in Nairobi, Kenya, where staff members monitor disasters, collect data and analyze early disaster indicators. The findings are then communicated to member states through alerts or advisories. As Julie Ouma, a geographic information system analyst at IGAD, explains.
Since all major hazards within our region are climate-related, so getting early warning in terms of extreme weather and climate issues will form anticipatory action in terms of disasters.
The anticipatory plan is being implemented in partnership with key humanitarian organizations with operations in the region, including the World Food Programme Eastern Africa and the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO. FAO Kenya's Hamisi Williams says climate change has affected Africa's food production and productivity.
It has also affected our levels of trade, you know, the entire system. And that means that it has overly reduced the ability of us to have nutritious food on the table.
Williams says having an anticipatory action plan can help the region better cope with future disasters.
We saw how every time we play catch-up with these disasters. But if we have a defined roadmap like now and we follow the roadmap, then what we are trying to do now is to say we are going to be ahead of the disaster when it comes.
IGAD's Abdihoun says implementation of the action plan offers a win-win situation for governments and communities in the region.
If the risk, as you anticipate, materializes, that means you have averted a big catastrophe to the communities, to their assets, to their livelihoods, and so on. If it doesn't unfold the way you expected it, you have still invested on communities.
The Horn of Africa has seen some of the worst climate-related disasters in recent years, including deadly droughts and subsequent flooding. Experts hope the regional transition from a reactive to a proactive approach to climate extremes will help protect vulnerable communities from their devastating impacts. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Calm is returning to Bukavu in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo after M23 fighters entered the city late last month and after two deadly explosions rocked an M23 public rally. The M23 rebel movement, which has expanded its territory since January, has ordered schools to resume operations after a brief suspension following their takeover. For an update, VOA's Pauline Diho spoke with Fabien Moizi, Secretary General of the Center of Political and Strategic Studies, based in Bukavu.
Last week, they appointed the governor and its two deputies and the mayor of the city. They also appoint the mayor of Bukavu.
So where do they get the authority to do that? They are not a government.
They have to administrate it. And that's why they are putting governor in whatever, because they said they want to show that the way they are governing is different with the government.
It's been 2 weeks since they took over. What is it that they have done this far to guarantee security for the people, to make sure that people are going about their business, going to shops, are going to the markets, and doing their normal, everyday kind of duties?
Besides the two bombs that exploded on Thursday, But the security in the town, I think it's good. They are trying to maintain the security. They have the military in the evening, which are going on the avenue to see if to assure that security is maintained.
You mean a military curfew?
Yeah, they made a curfew. Yeah, every evening there is a curfew, and they are asking the people if they found someone who is harassing people or who is in a bad thing, they must denounce him and they will take care of him the way they do it.
As a Congolese, are you secure? Is this your new reality?
I know it's a situation of war. People are afraid, but people, I think, are secure because we are sending our children to school. People are going to markets, and they have asked also the other activities to start by Monday. We are waiting now the administration to start because I appoint the new authorities. But I think normal people have, we can't fear something because of the assurance that they are there for the security of the people, but normal people has no problem except the bomb that exploded on Thursday, but the situation is not very bad at all.
You talked about young children going back to school. Are the schools open? Is everything back to normal?
Children are going to school. The market are okay. Stores has opened. The activities which are not resumed yet, it was the administrative activities. They were waiting for the appointment of new authorities. The big problem we have, it's accessing money to bank.
There's no money.
In Bukavu, the banks who are here are branches of the men who are in Kinshasa. The main offices are in Kinshasa. They don't have money. People can't access their money. This is a big issue that the M23 is facing here. It's a big challenge for the AFC and M23.
Fabien Mwazi is the Secretary General of the Center of Political and Strategic Studies in Bukavu. He spoke to VOA's Paul Indiho. The Ugandan army confirmed Sunday it has sent troops to another town in northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo to fight local armed groups. Uganda's Defense and Military Affairs spokesman, Felix Kulagiye, told the French news agency AFP that troops had entered and are in control of Mahaga town in Ituri province bordering Uganda. He said the DRC army requested a deployment by following alleged massacres of civilians carried out by a militia known as the Cooperative for the Development of Congo, CODECO. CODECO claims it defends the interests of the Lindu community, mainly composed of farmers, against the Hema community, mainly herders. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. We'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. Thousands of people gathered to attend the burial of Namibia's founding president, Sam Nujoma, the man who led Namibia to independence in 1990. Nujoma died on 8th February at the age of 95 and was laid to rest at the Heroes Acre Memorial outside the capital, Windhoek, on Saturday. Tracy Tafarinyaka reports from Windhoek in Namibia.
As early as 6 o'clock on Saturday morning, Namibians could be seen making their way, some on foot and others in their vehicles, to the National Shrine, the Heroes Acre, on the outskirts of Windhoek. They came to pay their final respects to the man who is credited with bringing independence to the Southern African country 35 years ago. Sam Nujoma died in a Windhoek hospital on February 8th after being hospitalized for 3 weeks. Namibia's current president, Nangolo Mbumba, described Nyoma as a giant who stood firm in the country's 24-year armed struggle for independence from South Africa.
Although our hearts remain laden with grief, we take solace that President Sam Nyoma, who will now rest among his fellow illustrious heroes and heroines, has completed his mission with distinction, fulfilling his destiny and leaving behind the most precious gift of freedom and independence for the people of Namibia.
Among the VIPs in attendance Saturday were South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and Angola's President João Lourenço. Former Presidents Thabo Mbeki of South Africa and Joaquim Chissano of Mozambique could also be seen in the crowds of mourners who came to pay their last respects to the elder statesman. Nyoma was the first leader of Namibia's independence movement, the Southwest Africa People's Organization, and later served 3 terms as Namibia's president. Pendukeni Ivula Itana is his niece and a former cabinet minister who served as Namibia's attorney general. She is also vice chairperson of the Sam Nyoma Foundation.
Nyoma united the people of Namibia who were divided according to the ethnic languages during the war. Our people were made to fight against each other. At independence, we introduced a policy of national reconciliation to forgive one another as brothers and sisters.
Public servant Crispin Kapalu was also among the mourners who sang and danced as they braved the hot Namibian sun to bid farewell to the leader whose name is captured in revolutionary struggle songs like Sema Ulipeni Elule Pandela, Elule Pandela, Ola Namibia. The lyrics mean, Sam Nyoma, where are you? Raise the flag.
Growing up, we knew about Nyoma, different interpretation. But after independence, as young people, then we could see the reality. Why our forefathers have to sacrifice their life.
Nyoma is survived by his wife, Kovambo Nyoma, his 2 sons, 24 grandchildren, and 11 great-grandchildren, according to the official eulogy. Sunday marked the end of 21 days of national mourning that President Pumba declared after his death. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Somalia's national television says that more than 40 members of the Islamist Al-Shabaab armed group were eliminated in an operation by the Somali National Army. According to Reuters, Somalia's national television, in a post on X on Sunday, said that the National Armed Forces, international partners, and vigilante locals are still continuing operations. The need to end the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, the United States imposing tariffs in other countries, and the downsizing of the U.S. federal government. Those are some of the topics that President Donald Trump is expected to highlight when he delivers the first address of this second term in office to Congress this week. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
Mr. Speaker! The President of the United States.
As he did back in 2017, U.S. President Donald Trump is scheduled to address a joint session of Congress on Tuesday. The Russia-Ukraine war is expected to feature prominently in Trump's speech in the context of his administration's ongoing efforts to mediate peace negotiations between the parties in conflict.
I'm looking for peace. We're not looking to go into a 10-year war and play games. We want peace.
The U.S. leader could also update Congress on his stance on the Israel-Hamas war and the future of Gaza. During a joint press conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on February 4th, Trump suggested the U.S. transform Gaza into the, quote, Riviera of the Middle East.
The United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent.
During his speech at the Capitol, analysts also expect that Trump will speak about the rationale behind the U.S. imposing tariffs on other countries. Shannon Bo O'Brien is Associate Professor of Instruction in the Government Department at the University of Texas at Austin. She spoke via Zoom.
I believe in his view, he believes that if he imposes tariffs, it's going to cause a rise in prices to cause manufacturers to have to come back to the United States to avoid those tariffs.
Trump could also push back on some criticism his administration has received over the speed and scope of its efforts to reduce government spending, cut fraud and waste, and slash the size of the federal workforce. Analyst Shannon Bo O'Brien via Zoom.
I think he's going to talk about it as a cost-saving measure. I believe he's going to talk about how great of a thing it is.
U.S. Senator Lisa Slotkin, a former CIA analyst, has been chosen to give the Democratic rebuttal to President Trump's address. Analyst O'Brien thinks Americans will probably follow Senator Slotkin's remarks and Trump's full address, primarily on web streams or social media platforms on Tuesday night, or read the highlights the following day. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Hello! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Anora was crowned Best Picture at the 97th Academy Awards on Sunday, one of five Oscars won by the independent film. The comedy drama about an exotic dancer who marries the son of a Russian oligarch beat out nine other contenders for the top prize, including major studio films Wicked, A Complete Unknown, and Dune Part 2. Director and producer Sean Baker won three individual Oscars, including Best Original Screenplay and Film Editing, as well as the Director's Trophy. His four Oscars in one ceremony ties the record set by the legendary Walt Disney in 1954. Anora star Mikey Madison won Best Actress, while Adrian Brody won Best Actor for The Brutalist more than two decades after winning his first Oscar for his portrayal of another Holocaust survivor in The Pianist. Kieran Culkin took home the Supporting Actor Oscar for his role as In a Real Pain, while Zoe Saldana won Best Supporting Actress for Emilia Perez.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Pete Hundley, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.